Welcome to the big interview on today's show, and I am pleased to be joined right now by Bruce Monrad, Chairman and Portfolio Manager at Northeast Investors Trust. Now, that is a high-yield bond fund, and we're going to be talking about high-yield bonds and a little bit more in the bond markets in general. But if you want to get more information on Bruce, the firm, and the fund, go to northeastinvestors.com. Bruce Monrad, thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
Thank you for having me.
You know, the entire market, stocks, bonds, whatever, it's all really in these unusual circumstances. Even in interest rates where we know lower for longer is the idea, we're seeing a lot of things change. But in high yield bonds, which are kind of a hybrid, they're a bond that is maybe more a reflection of the stock market. We've got really interesting stuff because we've gone through years where we really had extremely low default rates on junk. And it's not that default rates have come way up, but there's a lot more reason for worry about what's going to happen as we get through the pandemic, not just on the corporate side, but even on the muni side. I mean, there's a whole lot of municipalities that are missing all that tourism dollars and the taxes that they were collecting that they needed. So for you, how big a crossroads are we at when it comes to high yield bonds? I mean, are we at a spot where we should assume that trouble's coming?
Well, we got a lot of cross currents going on. We've got the economy coming out of the COVID recession, and we think that'll continue, and that's good. Interest rates are at low levels, and the Fed, I think, is determined to keep them there because interest rates, credit markets are important for keeping the economy going, keeping people's paychecks coming. And so I think the Fed, as they proved starting last March, are not going to. The Fed will not want the credit markets to be destabilized. So that's good. I think you raise a very good point, though, which is that we do need to pay attention to things like ratings. You mentioned the muni market. The sovereigns. You know, a lot of governments up and down the totem pole. Countries, municipalities. They all have less in the way of revenues. And so there could be some rating surprises out there, and that's certainly something we factor in.
When you are looking at this market, are we expecting that there is a shoe to drop? I mean, that there would be a wave, or if we get to a spot where there's a problem, it's kind of like it happens to one and then it happens to everybody? Or is it going to be more like what we've seen, which is, yeah, there's always the occasional default, but we're not going to see anything that really kind of triggers a bigger problem?
Yeah, no, I'd say, and I've been doing this since 1989, so I've seen several recessions, a couple of recessions, and during those recessions, 1989, 2000, the default rate in high yield had gone, would go up, maybe from 1-2% to, high towards 10%. Now, what are we seeing right now? Obviously, the economy is doing actually better is the best way to think about it, incrementally better. And it was at its, of course, most vulnerable position last spring. Companies that suffered would be in the energy sector. That was a big one. And then the ones that we would think that are in the crosshairs of COVID or secular issues like retail, that's that sort of thing. Where do we think defaults will go in the foreseeable future? We're not that worried about it because one thing to remember is that with interest rates low, pretty much all borrowers, whether it be companies or individuals, on our credit cards and the like, with lower interest rates or our mortgages, with lower interest rates, it's a lot easier for people to make their interest payments.
One of the things that was happening leading into the election was everybody was trying to say, which are the Biden stocks, which are the Trump stocks, or which sectors will do well. And they were looking at it from an equity standpoint. I don't know that many people looked at it from a bond standpoint, but I know that you and some others believed that a Biden victory would be specifically good for high yield bonds. Why is that? Explain what you expect to see happen now.
Well, there's an element here of a relative value comment. I think it's generally viewed that a Biden victory would mean a little more government spending. Rightly or wrongly, and a little higher taxation. And it's pretty clear that taxation will fall in part, increased taxation would fall in part on corporate America. That is to say, stocks, Okay, just you know, if you're counting on dividend income from your stock holdings, you're gonna, you know, there's gonna be right before you, the company you own is gonna be paying more taxes. That's not quite the same thing for high yield. We collect interest payments. You know, the average, I think, on an ETF, it's now about a 5% yield on now. Those are paid with pre-tax dollars. So whether corporate tax rates go up or down really doesn't affect us. That's really a problem for the equity markets. So that was what I was sort of getting at.
When you consider high yield, it's an interesting space, right? Because historically, while most people think, oh, I want to boost my income, and they think of high yield as an income investment, the truth is that, well, for when high yield was starting years ago, and I've been doing this as long as you have, when high yield was, you know, first people getting people's attention, it was you can get returns almost like a stock, close to equity-like returns, with better downside protection. Even though they're called junk bonds, the idea was that you'd get better downside protection and returns like stocks. Are we entering one of those periods of time when high yield is actually going to outperform stocks? Because it has happened. It's not really talked about, and it's not on that long-term, you know, what do you expect out of the market to give you? But in certain times, high yield has outperformed the stock market. And it does, under the right circumstances, give you equity-like returns with better downside protection. Those times usually are volatile times. So are we entering that period now?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, we would take the view, and there's obviously a lot of uncertainty here in the world, but we would certainly, let's put it this way, ask the question, is 2020 sort of akin to 2000? So remember, 2000 was a frothy time in the stock markets. A lot of high flyers, a lot of people had made a lot of money in the stock market. And yet, if you look forward from 2000 until 2005, let's say 5-year period, you didn't make any money going forward in the stock market. I have lots of friends who thought that they were home free at that moment, and they didn't make any money in the stock market from 2000 to 2005, and they would have collected, you know, a handsome interest rate at that time, let's say 6, 7, 8% in the high yield market, and would have been better off. And, you know, in over 5 years, that adds up. It's possible that we're facing that similar situation right now. You know, we've had some pretty good times in the stock market. It might not be a bad time, you know, thinking with a longer horizon, you know, not next week, not, you know, next month, to step back and say, hey, you know, if I can lock in, you know, a high rate of return with probably lower volatility, you know, I guess that, you know, that nothing is for sure. Maybe that's a good thing to do.
But in helping my audience figure out how you do that from an allocation standpoint, that would be, I'm going to use high yield bonds, but I'm going to treat them like a stock portion of my portfolio. Or would you say, you know, no, if I've got 60-40, I'm going to make 10% of that 40, keep it the bond portion, even though I know it's going to be more like an equity. I mean, at that point, do you consider your allocation to high yield on the stock side because that's the performance you're expecting and what you're going for, or do you consider it on the bond side?
Yep, and it cuts both ways. You're right. As I framed it, it would be, gee, I want to, you know, put some hay in the barn. You know, things have been, you know, this would be a substitute for stocks. And but of course you could take the view on the other side, which is, gee, you know, I want it to be a substitute for other fixed income investments, and because let's say short term interest rates are so low, that you could make that express that view too into high yield, and we have shareholders who are doing both.
And explain so that my audience, as we're discussing this, understands why would they expect high yield to have less volatility? Because I mean, a lot of people love the low volatility stock funds, but now we're talking about a low volatility bond fund that, oh, by the way, we're using potentially as a substitute for stocks.
Right. You know, so that one way of looking at it would be just to think about historical relationships. And indeed, high yield has typically been less volatile than the S&P 500 over a period of time. But there's an intuitive sense. You know, remember we buy bonds. Our bonds are promises to pay. We get interest payments every 6 months from our companies, and they promise to pay us back in 5 to 10 years, depending on the thing we own. That's a little different than signing up for someone for an instrument, a stock, that you're depending on either animal spirits or dividends 10, 15, 20 years out. So that's a little bit explains why there might be the differences in volatility between the two classes.
Bruce, great stuff. It's been really fun chatting with you. I hope you'll come back and do this with us again sometime.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
That's Bruce Monrad. He is chairman and portfolio manager at Northeast Investors Trust. I should have given you the ticker symbol. It's NTHEX. If you want to learn more about, well, it's a no-load, high-yield fund. If you want to learn more about it, go to northeastinvestors.com. While you're there, you can find some of Bruce's commentaries. Okay, we just hit the halfway pole on the 11-11 edition of Money Life. But whether you're a numerologist or not, well, 11-11 continues on this show. Up next, we'll be talking about investor optimism, or the lack thereof. Ed Carson from Investors Business Daily is here talking the IBD-TIPP Economic Optimism Index and the market calls after that. Stick around. This is Money Life.